Turn your living room into a joyful, hands-free playroom with Cocomelon Sing and Play with JJ. Your child sings, moves, and learns right alongside JJ and friends, all on the big screen. It's designed thoughtfully to spark speech, rhythm, and coordination through songs and active play. Try an ad-free, safe, and interactive way to make screen time part of their learning and growth. Parents love how easy it is, voice-controlled and frustration-free. Kids love every moment of singing, laughing, and playing along. It's fun for them, and it's feel-good for you. Available now in the Volley app on your smart TV. Just search Volley in your TV's app store and start your free trial of Cocomelon Sing and Play with JJ today. That's Cocomelon Sing and Play with JJ. Available now in the Volley app on your smart TV. Search Volley and start your free trial today.
Volley.
This is Dr. Wren for the Vegan Report. Today's episode, we'll be discussing the controversial, perhaps, topic of feminism and is it necessary for effective vegan outreach? I will be arguing that yes, it is not only essential, but it has been fundamental to effective animal advocacy and vegan outreach from the very beginning of professional activism in the 19th century. If you'd like to learn more about me and the work that I do, before we get started, I'll direct you to CoreyLeeWren.com, that's CoreyLeeWren.com. And there you can find all of my research available to view and download free of charge. You can also find my YouTube channel at Corey Wren, and I'm also on Instagram at Corey Lee Wren. And I have a newsletter, and you can sign up for that if you go to my website. I am a senior lecturer of sociology at the University of Kent in Canterbury, England, and I'm the co-director of the Center for the Study of Social and Political Movements. And I received my PhD in sociology with Colorado State University in 2016. I'm past chair of the Animals and Society section of the American Sociological Association, Animals and Society section, and I was in the past a chair for that same section. I'm also the co-founder of the International Association of Vegan Sociologists. I've published five books so far on effective animal outreach, and that is A Rational Approach to Animal Rights, published by Palgrave in 2016, Peace Now Protest, Animal Rights in the Age of Nonprofits, that was published with University of Michigan Press 2019, Animals in Irish Society, published with SUNY Press 2021, Vegan Witchcraft, Contemporary Magical Practice and Multi-Species Social Change, which is published by Routledge this year, and forthcoming that should be released, gosh, if not in 2026, and definitely in 2027. I'm about to hand in the final draft for that, which is why we're talking about feminism today. The topic is vegan feminism. The book is called Vegan Feminism, History, Theory, Activism, and that will be coming with Bloomsbury Academic. So that's me in a nutshell. I'm really well published in these topics, and I've been doing vegan feminism for 10 plus years. And as part of my research for this forthcoming book, I've really delved into what I would consider three major waves of vegan feminism since the 19th century. Now, many people, when they think of vegan advocacy, they think of it as something that is gender neutral, even race neutral, or class neutral, ethnicity neutral. But actually, that's just not the way our society works. I can tell you as a sociologist that we're always viewing our social world through the lens of gender, race, and oftentimes class as well. So it really isn't doing us any favors if we try to pretend that gender doesn't matter. So I'm going to be talking today about my expertise as a sociologist and also someone who focuses on social movement theory. But I should also direct you to the wild and wonderful world of vegan social psychology. And they've been doing quite a lot of research that actually supports. There is evidence that in people's minds, they do connect their attitudes about gender, race, and so on with their attitudes toward animals. So in the past 10 plus years, we now have evidence to support what vegan feminist theory has been arguing all along, that yes, gender does matter. So let me start by explaining what vegan feminism is and where it comes from, what its history is. So vegan feminism is basically making the argument that we can't fully understand veganism or advocate for other animals or promote veganism without having a critique of gender. So the idea with feminism, if we can even break it down further, feminism is not about hating men, bashing men, isolating from men. Feminism is all about the idea that gender should not matter when we are distributing resources, and gender should not matter as far as someone's quality of life and their life chances. However, we do live in a very gender unequal society. We do live in an androcentric society, which means male-centered. And just as a quick example of that, if you look at most legislative seats in the world, globally, it's about 80% of those go to men. In the United States, where I'm from, we still have not had a female president, and we probably won't for a very long time. Most of the people who are in important judicial seats, they are also men. Law historically has been designed around the male point of view and to protect male interests, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't live in a post-feminist society where gender doesn't matter anymore because somehow feminism has solved all of our problems. To the contrary, we still have quite a lot of institutionalized sexism, and gender still is a key determinant in someone's life chances and their quality of life and resources they'll have access to. We have a lot of disparity over career aspects, for instance, what kind of jobs are open to you, what kind of opportunities are open to you, and also, we have major disparities in pay, so we still have a big gender pay gap, which gets even worse, by the way, when you bring in race, class, etc. So the idea then with feminism is that we should not live in a society where that is the case. It should be a society where everyone is free to express their gender identity however they want, and in some cases, some feminists would also say maybe get rid of gender altogether and let people just be people. But it's not about putting men down or waging a war against men. That's not the case. So when we look at vegan feminism, it's a similar situation. We should not have a case where masculinity and patriarchy is shaping our relationship with other animals or our diets, plant-based or not plant-based, but it's simply not the case. It is very much so true that gender does shape our relationship with animals and our diets. So, for instance, we know that men are more likely to be consuming animal products and far more animal products than women. So part of men's gender expression is through domination. So that's really what masculinity traditionally has been understood as. It's about domination. And so it's a very conflict-based gender. Patriarchy is a very conflict-based social arrangement. So one way that you can express your masculinity is by putting down others and sort of making yourself king of the mountain, however you want to phrase that. And so putting down animals, consuming animals, dominating animals is one way to do that. So that's why we see men are more likely to eat meat and lots of meat. That's also why we're more likely to see men engaged in slaughterhouse work or vivisection laboratories, and et cetera, et cetera. Whereas for women, because femininity has been defined as expressing submissiveness, well, then you can understand then how women are more allowed to align with fellow animals, because animals being one of the weakest social groups as far as access to power and resources and social status, it makes sense then for women to align with other animals because they too have very low social statuses in a patriarchal society. It's also okay for women to be vegetarian or vegan for the most part, because, again, that is aligning with social expectations of what femininity is and how it's supposed to be expressed. So it's no secret, or it's no surprise, rather, that we see more women being vegan or vegetarian and more men who are not only eating a lot of animal products but resistant to veganism and vegetarianism because it undermines their very masculinity. So we have that. That's the basic element of vegan feminism. And also, if you look at the work of eco-feminists in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, they will also say, well, let's take that a step further. And it's about our relationship with nature more broadly. So non-human animals oftentimes getting lumped into nature. Well, the idea that nature is feminized, something to conquer, something to exploit, resource to own, to be traded, bartered, to fight wars over, nature itself then is part of that feminized space. And so Marty Keel, for instance, a leading vegan eco-feminist, and also Greta Gard is another good example, they've made the argument that as we in the West have started to objectify nature and feminize nature, then it's no surprise that the status of nature and the well-being of nature and non-human animals who are associated with that have plummeted. And then, of course, we can also take this to a global scale and see how this is also wrapped up with colonization and global inequality. So we really then, from a vegan feminist perspective, need to understand how theoretically we're using a gender lens to understand our material and our social world. And if we don't pay attention to that, we're not, as activists, really fully understanding the true mechanism of, in this case, for this podcast, speciesism. So that's the gist. And this is something that is not necessarily new. This is something that has been around for several decades, maybe even centuries. So I would place this really into three waves. It sort of follows the animal rights movement, the waves of the animal rights movement, but also the waves of the feminist movement. In the 1800s, some of the very first activists for animals were women. We also had many men who were involved in that, but unfortunately, because patriarchy has really shaped the animal rights movement, a lot of that history has been lost to us. So we saw in the 1970s and 80s, for instance, an active discouraging of remembering women and their contributions and associating the public's mind with, associating veganism and animal rights in the public's mind with women. So there's a reason why a lot of us don't know this history. It was sort of actively, if not outspokenly, but it was actively sort of pushed to the background in an effort for, the hope was by these men was that the animal rights movement would be taken more seriously if we kind of forget that women had anything to do with the movement. So just had to put that in there. But anyway, in the 19th century, there were a lot of women who were involved with this. So the anti-vivisection campaign of the 1800s, which really started in the 1860s and gained momentum in the 1880s, 90s, and 1900s, women were behind quite a lot of that. It wasn't just women, of course, men were also involved. But because so many women who were standing up against this new horror, this new institution of vivisection, it very quickly became gendered in the public mind. So you have to remember at this time, most women were not allowed to enter into medical facilities. They weren't allowed to become doctors. They weren't allowed to be professionally trained because for the past 200 years, women who had originally been the knowledge keepers, the community healers who understand herbs and folk medicines, that has been actively squashed out, midwives actively squashed out, and then not long after in the 1800s, outright banned. Then they were prevented from entering into official medical training. So this was an active effort to demean women and to rob women of their important community power and knowledge. So it wasn't a surprise then you start to see men in vivisection who were using this, by the way. Some of it was out of interest, curiosity. A lot of it actually had to do with they just wanted to further their careers. Because going into the medical establishment was usually only available to the wealthy, but for those who could get in, it was a way to navigate the very rigid class system of the Victorian era. And so men really gravitated toward this. Women were not really allowed to participate. And a lot of feminists actually got involved in anti-vivisectionist work, and this is one of the reasons why it became sort of codified in the public mind that this was a women's movement. But actually, these feminists were not just, you know, doing women's suffrage and then trying to advocate for animals. They were doing a lot of other causes. They were very, very intersectional in their interests. They were fighting for Irish liberation, Indian liberation. They were fighting for the welfare of the poor. They were fighting for better conditions in the working class slums in England and America and elsewhere. They were doing all kinds of abolitionists. Quite a lot of them were also abolitionists. So it just kind of happened that there's a lot of reasons which I don't have time to get into. You can find out more in my book. But the idea is that they sort of got latched on to the animal rights movement, even though feminists were doing a lot of work across the board. So then we moved into the World Wars, and during that time was a bit of an abeyance period where everyone was kind of focusing on the war front. This doesn't mean that there was complete dearth of animal advocacy. There were women doing some work like advocating for war horses who were being wounded, and a lot of them were then being used for vivisection for war technology. So they were trying to advocate and help those animals. There was promotion of pacifism, being critical of a violent war society in of itself, etc., etc. But then by the time we move into the middle of the 20th century, the women are now regathering their strength. A lot of the organizations from the Victorian period are continuing on into this 20th century. And new ones are being formed as needed, because now we have a whole new landscape of speciesism. So they're doing a lot of amazing work, but unfortunately, as I said, this is also the rise of the male philosophers. But this is very important. I want to emphasize, this is one of the things that vegan feminism aims to do, is not just to say, well, we need to take a gendered perspective of the reality of the situation. We also, vegan feminism is arguing, we need to deconstruct this patriarchal colonization of animal advocacy. Because, in fact, some of the earliest philosophical works that were being produced in the 1960s were not by Peter Singer, but by the likes of Bridget Brophy or Ruth Harrison. And also the Godleviches. So Roz Godlevich, who wrote one of the very first animal rights philosophical pieces, and then went on to co-author a book with several other philosophers, including Peter Singer. And now Peter Singer gets all the credit for it, but actually there were women doing this work at the same time as him and before him. So as we then move into the late 20th century, it's very, very clear that this is still a women's movement. And we have, by the turn of the new millennium, we have four out of five activists who are women. So regardless, and we have all these efforts for women to be stamped out of the movement, nonetheless, here we are, we remain. And we still have this sort of stubbornness about the role of women in the animal rights movement. It's as though this is somehow going to detract from animals. And vegan feminism would actually argue, at least I would argue, that by emphasizing that women are somehow selfish or egotistical by focusing on feminism, that's actually drawing on age-old stereotypes, sexist, misogynist in some cases, stereotypes, where women have historically been expected to put others first and to take a step back and, you know, stay in the margins. And that doesn't do anyone any favors, because really it's invisibilizing one of the greatest strengths that the animal rights movement has, and that's women's work, women's efforts, women's creativity. So vegan feminism then is arguing, what would happen, what would we gain if we actually recognized women's contributions, validated them, celebrated them, and stopped filling up our animal rights hall of fame with men, and stopped only reading books by men and only reading cookbooks by women, perhaps on the other side of that. What if we started to recognize and celebrate women's contributions? What could we achieve at that point? To that end, we also need to start thinking a bit more critically about the gender binary itself. What about trans and non-binary folks? I'm so sorry to report that at the time of this recording, there's still quite a lot of division about the acceptance of the LGBTQ plus community. For instance, there was a belief they were a non-binary Taiwanese American person. They published a blog for the Vegan Society near the end of 2025, and the vitriol that they received was so extreme, the Vegan Society sadly had to shut down comments. And the nature of the comments who were in opposition was simply boils down to, you're making it about yourself, you're taking away attention from the animals. But this is the deal, like, animal rights and veganism has never been more popular, but one of the reasons that's becoming popular is because it's getting delodged from this archaic of idea of who can be a vegan and who can be an animal activist. This idea that you have to be a middle-class white person in the West in order to be an effective, to be a legitimate, if you will, vegan activist, that needs to go. And now recognizing not just the diversity in sexuality, but also in gender and nationality, all that's going to be very important. So that's where vegan feminism is asking us to push back, is to start challenging that which we take for granted. And this is me as a sociologist speaking as well, someone who specializes in social movement theory. One of the main problems with the animal rights movement is we have this idea, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But what that really translates to is we have a fear of self-reflection. This idea of it's tradition, it's been that way, it's always been that way. We always read Animal Liberation by Peter Singer, and we always promote men. We always put men at the front when we're speaking to media. And that's just the way it's always been. That's just the reality of it. Well, that's just simply bad science and bad advocacy. We need to be flexible. We need to be reflexive. And if we can't start to have that sort of movement around us, we are a movement dead in the water. So I will leave it at that for today. That is me signing out. That is vegan feminism in a nutshell, its illustrious history, and why it is relevant for effective decision-making and tactical inspiration. And hopefully, if the book comes out, you'll be inspired to read a little bit further. So thank you for listening, and I appreciate your interest and support.